This is an iHeart podcast.
The climate death cult, they're at it again, and the timing couldn't possibly be any worse. We have a former abortion doctor, and you're really going to want to hear this. We have all that and much more coming up on I'm Right. Uh-oh. This is not good. Federal Reserve jacked rates through the roof today. That's the highest increase since 1994. And let's just pause on this and unpack exactly what this means. This means these people are scared to death of hyperinflation. Because the only way to stop inflation is to raise interest rates. However, when an economy is going poorly, as ours clearly is right now, raising interest rates is devastating for it. Raising the interest rates can launch your economy into a great recession. If money gets more expensive to borrow, everything gets more expensive. It can push your economy into a great recession or worse, right? So why would you jack up the rates that much like they did today? There's only one reason they would take that risk, and that's these people see hyperinflation coming. That means all the inflation we've been suffering through already, it's not over. These people, to do this, when the economy hurts, I mean, the economy was sitting on a cliff and they kind of just walked up and gave it a little push in the back. To do that means these people must be scared to death. Hey. Prep how you can, all right? Prep how you can. What are we going to do? We'll go through it together, help each other as much as we can. It's the way it is. Which brings us to what I've talked about a lot before, the climate change portion of the American communist. Remember, it's all just communism. From climate change to feminism to Antifa to Black Lives Matter, LGBTQ Air Force, all this stuff. All it is different labels on communism, so they can sell it to more aggrieved people. If you want communists to gain power, you have to find aggrieved people and tell them they've been screwed over by the system, and then they'll give you the power to destroy everything. That's what the communists all want. But it all falls under the communist umbrella. But the most damaging portion of that umbrella by a mile, they're the climate change people. Because all communism is based on destruction, right? Everything must be destroyed. Everything must be burned down to ash before we can rebuild. But the climate changers, it's quite literally their platform. You know what you're breathing out right now? You're breathing out carbon. Perfectly natural. The plants are going to breathe it in and then produce oxygen. And you know, it's a pretty good system God had set up for us here. But the climate changers, they believe what you're breathing out is killing the planet. And since they're part of an anti-human death cult called the climate change death cult anyway, they don't have any qualms about you dying. In fact, they think you probably need to. I've told you this before. One of the very first climate changers, one of the leaders on this stuff, I think this was back in the 50s, he spoke openly that the world had billions too many people, and really the appropriate population for the Earth would be around 3 billion. Well, we've got about 7 billion now. You remember when I told you these people, if they had their way, would kill more people than Mao, Stalin, and Hitler combined? Well, that's exactly what they would do. Without a moment of hesitation, they would slaughter billions of people on this planet with their policies, and they would go to sleep every single night, totally convinced they're the good guys. Gas just hit $5 a gallon, over $5 a gallon. Diesel, all those semis that bring you all your goods, diesel, $5.78 a gallon. And what's wild isn't just that the gas prices are destroying an economy, along with the interest rates, along with inflation. The wildest part is these insane climate change death cultists. They're not even trying to fix it. In fact, they're thrilled about it. This person isn't some wingnut hippie on the street corner. This person is the energy secretary.
Madam Secretary, at what point does these prices, what point do they become unsustainable? And two, ironically, does this push us closer to renewable energy?
Yeah, I mean, I think the prices are unsustainable for many people right now. I mean, everyday citizens who are on fixed incomes paying huge amounts of money that they had not anticipated or budgeted for just to get to work. It is unsustainable for many, and unfortunately, there's not a quick fix. However, your point about also accelerating our progress toward clean energy is very, very important.
They're not sitting around stressing about gas prices wrecking your quality of life. They're sitting around looking at these gas prices and they're thrilled. All the death, misery, and destruction that will come with this recession, they're happy about it. They view it as being simply necessary if we're going to remake the world into this wonderful communist utopia. John Kerry, super uber wealthy John Kerry, is up there right now at this very moment saying we're going to be completely gas powered car free by 2035.
And energy security worry is driving a lot of the thoughts now about, oh, we need more drilling of gas. We need more drilling of this. We need to go back to coal. No, we don't. We absolutely don't. President Biden has made a very significant commitment for the United States to be, first of all, power sector carbon free by 2035. By 2035, to only be producing electric vehicles in the United States, which General Motors and Ford and others manufacturing have bought into.
These people aren't looking around right now at your quality of life being destroyed and stressing about it. They're looking around right now and thinking, yes, more. I know that's sick. But look, that's what the communist is. He's an anti-human at his very core. Remember this. Remember, it's so wild that right now Americans are outraged about gas prices, right? And we're all watching this destruction. And somehow we're forgetting in all this, these people campaigned on what's happening right now. It's not like they're shocked. They told you what they were going to do.
Would there be any place for fossil fuels, including coal and fracking, in a Biden administration?
No, we would work it out. We would make sure it's eliminated.
No more drilling on federal lands. No more drilling, including offshore. No ability for the oil industry to continue to drill, period.
I guarantee you, we're going to end fossil fuel.
What about, say, stopping fracking and stopping new pipeline infrastructure?
Yes. New pipeline.
No more, no new fracking.
We are going to get rid of fossil fuels.
I've argued against any more oil drilling or gas drilling on federal lands.
No one's going to build a coal-fired plant again, and we're going to get rid of the ones we have now.
Have a transition from the oil industry, yes.
Would you be willing to sacrifice some of that growth, even knowing potentially that it could displace thousands, maybe hundreds of thousands of blue-collar workers in the interest of transitioning to that greener economy?
The answer is yes.
Listen to how cold they are. He was asked about hundreds of thousands of American workers. Hey, what if you wreck these people's lives? Are you okay with that? Yes, of course. Without a second thought. And so what do they do about all this? They campaigned on it. You just watched it. It's now coming true. People's lives are being wrecked. Now people are getting angry. They're starting to speak out about it. They're starting to say, hey, you tried to do this. You did this on purpose. Now you're wrecking us and you're not helping. So what do? They have to do something, right? Well, Gina McCarthy, I think, lays out how the communist thinks pretty well.
And so the challenge is now that we're moving from denial to actually just trying to disengage the public from understanding the values of solar energy, the values of wind energy, the benefits of clean energy. We have to get tighter. We have to get better at communicating. And frankly, the tech companies have to stop allowing specific individuals over and over again to spread disinformation. That's what the fossil fuel companies pay for. That's what folks who make money out of fossil fuels and don't make money and don't care about saving consumers' costs. That's what they do. We have to be smarter than that, and we need the tech companies to really jump in.
You see, peasant, the problem isn't that your quality of life is being destroyed. The problem isn't that Democrats are doing it on purpose. The problem is you're allowed to complain about it. You need to shut up, peasant, while we destroy your life. Why don't you shut up? Hey, big tech, shut this person up. They're complaining about us destroying their life. Shut this person up. These people are monsters, man. And keep this in mind. Keep in mind how evil and depraved these people are as we move on and start talking about gun control. Because that's all the rage right now, right? Gun control, everything's about guns in the wake of all these mass shootings. Make sure you keep in mind who exactly wants to take away your guns and how damaging it is that the system now requires everybody to toe the line. Everybody has to toe the company line. Why is an NFL quarterback being asked about guns?
You know, with everything that's going on, if you're not going to outlaw everything, you got to at least make it harder to get those crazy guns that everybody's using. I don't think you should be able to just walk in there and buy one. You got to be able to go through, you know, a rigorous process to be able to buy something like that, I think. So, you know, hopefully the people that get paid to make those decisions figure that out. My job is to play football, but hopefully the politicians can figure that one out.
Okay, we'll set aside the fact that that answer was awful and Joe Burrow doesn't know what he's talking about. He's an NFL quarterback. Why was he even asked about it? Well, because all our sports reporters now, they're all full-blown communists too, and they will demand fealty. Get on your knee, Joe, and say what I tell you to say. Repeat it. Say it, Joe. Say it. That's the kind of sick society we have now. And don't do this thing. I see the right do it all the time now, and it drives me up the wall. Up the wall. It's so naive when people say, no one cares what that guy thinks. He's an idiot. Joe Burrow has 3 million followers on Instagram. Joe Burrow has the 4th highest selling jersey in the NFL. People do care about what Joe Burrow says about everything. Just because you don't doesn't mean other people don't. I don't like it either that athletes and entertainers have such an influence on the direction of our culture. I don't like it. I don't celebrate it, but I also don't deny it because I understand us denying it and walking away from that is a big part of why we've lost this culture right now. We've lost it because we look at entertainers and say, ha, no one cares what George Clooney thinks. Yes, they do. Lots of people do. They shouldn't, but they do. We don't get to live in a world of make-believe. We have to live in a world that exists. Remember this. These people are after you. Evil people want to destroy your way of life. Stupid, uneducated people will help them do it. And this is the worst part of it. You want to talk about making you uncomfortable. This is the worst part of it. There's hardly anybody fighting for you. Not in Washington, D.C. Here's the most powerful Republican in Washington, D.C., stepping up to the microphone and giving away more of your rights.
Senator Cornyn, who, as you know, I asked to be the point person on our side to see if we could come to an outcome after these horrible school shootings. And his teammates indicated, as you have reported, a coming together behind a framework which hopefully can be turned into legislative language and passed. For myself, I'm comfortable with the framework, and if the legislation ends up reflecting what the framework indicates, I'll be supportive.
There's nobody back there fighting for your rights. Once again, I watched them do it. I watch Republicans play the Democrats' game on the Democrats' field with the Democrats' referees enforcing the Democrats' rules. The system woke up and it decided they were going to go after guns because they want to be able to hurt you. And so over and over and over again, every single part of the system, remember my sky is green theory? From the media to professors to entertainers to football players to Democrats, they all decided guns are the problem, 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 guns are the problem. And the most powerful Republican in Washington, D.C. got together with his buddies and said, well, clearly guns are the problem, guys. I swear, I've never been a third-party guy. I'm not a Republican, as you know. I'm an anti-communist. I swear, maybe it's time. Maybe it's time for one. All right, all that may have made you uncomfortable, but I'm right. And there's something else that's going to make you uncomfortable, but daggone, do you want to see this? We have a former abortion doctor going to give us some real perspective on this whole thing. That is coming up next. Now, let's talk about putting your money where your morals are. Speaking of corporate America and every part of the system coming after you, I want you to do me a favor right now. I want you to go look up your health insurance company, and I want you to look up the things they're saying about Pride Month. I want you to go look up the things they said about Black Lives Matter. Look up what they're talking about when it comes to guns. And tell me, are those your values? Are you happy to be funding that? You know, there's a faith-based insurance company, One Share Health. They'd never spit on your values. Great coverage, great rates, whatever you need. Go to my.onesharehealth.com/Kelly, promo code Jesse Kelly. Start sending your health insurance money to someone who doesn't hate your guts. We'll be back.
Each morning, the President of the United States receives a highly classified briefing on the most important issues facing the country. It's called the President's Daily Brief, or PDB. It's delivered by America's spies and analysts. Well, now you can hear your very own PDB in the form of a podcast hosted by me, Brian Dean Wright, a former CIA operations officer. Each morning at 6 a.m. Eastern, I'll bring you 15 to 20 minutes of the most important issues facing the country, giving you the critical intelligence and analysis you need to start your morning.
We didn't get a Roe ruling today like we wanted, but hopefully one is coming soon, and hopefully it's the right one, because it's an awful, awful thing. And we thought it would be very appropriate to bring on somebody I really admire, Dr. Anthony Levitino. He's a former abortion doctor, now a pro-life advocate. Doctor, I think it's so brave to come out and say, hey, I was wrong, did some things I don't like, and now trying to right wrongs. I've always been so impressed by that. I appreciate it. Please tell me your story. Walk me through your story. How'd you get to where you are?
Well, I graduated from medical school in 1976, and at the time, if you asked me how I felt about the abortion issue, I wouldn't have hesitated to tell you I'm pro-choice. This is a decision between a woman, her doctor, and nobody, including the baby's father, has anything to say about it. And so as part of my training, I, you know, along with learning how to do deliveries and everything else that OBGYNs do, I learned to do first and second trimester abortions. When I finally went out into private practice 4 years later, I set up practice with a physician that I had worked with in my training, and we did first and second trimester abortions in our practice. During my training was when I met the lady that I married, and like many young couples, we wanted to have a family of our own. Found out very quickly that we had an infertility problem that just wasn't happening. And we were told eventually after two surgical procedures that it was unlikely that we would ever be able to conceive a child. So we attempted to adopt a child, and anyone who's tried to adopt a child knows how difficult that is. We called state agencies, religious agencies, county agencies, anyone we could, and the best we could do was to get on a 5-year waiting list to actually get on the waiting list. And it was during that time in my training, when I was during learning and doing first and second trimester abortions, is when I had my first doubts about it. They were strictly selfish, but I'm not a fool. I know the reason there are no babies to adopt are people like me doing abortions. And I remember literally thinking, gosh, I'm throwing these kids in the garbage. But what happened eventually is when we were told it wasn't likely we'd be able to conceive, and when we were frustrated by the adoption process, I came up with what my wife still credits as the best idea I've ever come up with, and that was, look, I know 50 obstetricians on a first name basis. Let's advertise and let them know we're looking for a baby. And through that, we were able to adopt a little girl that we named named Heather. We named her Heather in August of 1978. As sometimes happens, after all the years, after all the tears, and after all the doubts, now we had a baby. My wife got pregnant the very next month, and our son and daughter were just 10 months apart. But of course, now that I've got a millionaire's family, the proverbial son and daughter, any concerns I had about abortion simply evaporated, and I went back to business as usual. On June 23rd, 1984, was a beautiful day in Albany, New York, where we lived. It was a Saturday. I was on call. It wasn't very busy. So I made rounds and then got to spend the rest of the day with my family. We took the kids to an amusement park. We had dinner together. And that evening, the kids were playing in the backyard when we had friends come over for cake and coffee. And we were speaking with our friends when at 7:25 that night, we heard the screech of brakes out in front of the house. We ran out. The kids had gone in the road and Heather had been hit by a car. She was a mess. I'm a doctor. I'm supposed to be able to save people's lives. My wife was an intensive care nurse. This is our work. We did what we could, but she literally died in her arms in the back of an ambulance. Anybody with children may think they have some idea of what that might be like to lose a child, but unless you've been through this yourself, you have no idea. I hope you never find out. But what do you do after a disaster? You bury your child, try to get back into your life. And I don't remember exactly how long it was after her death, but I showed up at the hospital in the operating room to do a second trimester D&E abortion. These abortions are done starting at 13 weeks, where the baby's a little bit bigger than the width of your hand, up to 24 weeks, where 20 week would be the length of your hand from the tip of your middle finger to the wrist. That's head to rump, not counting the legs at 20 weeks. We did them up to 24, which made them maybe another inch taller. And I was doing one of those abortions. And when you do these things, you literally have to use a heavy clamp called a Sofer clamp. And you literally rip out an arm or a leg. And I just stared at it in the clamp and I got sick. But once you start an abortion, you can't stop. And I finished that abortion. And I know people think it's strange, but everything I tell them is firsthand and true. For the first time in my career, I looked at that pile of body parts that used to be somebody's baby that I had just killed. And I didn't see her wonderful right to choose, and I didn't see all the money I just made in 15 minutes, and I didn't see what a great doctor I was helping her with a problem. All I could see was somebody's son or daughter. And it occurred to me in that moment that patient had come to me. At the time, we were charging $800 for a procedure like that. In today's dollars, that's over $2,000. So imagine being able to make $2,000 legally in 15 minutes. And this patient had come to me figuratively, never literally, and said, here's $2,000, kill my son or daughter. And I was the kind of person that would look her straight in the eye and say, sure, I'll do that. And that set up a process over the next several months. I eventually got away from abortions entirely. Never did one after that.
Well, I support you completely. Thank you for sharing what I know can't be an easy thing to share. I want to pick your brain just a little bit about the mentality of the doctors who are still doing this, because you used to be this way. And you mentioned just a moment ago how you felt like you were helping, or helping someone. Do you think that's a common thing that the doctors who perform this are doing? Is that just an excuse they make, or is that a common thing they genuinely feel like they're helping?
Absolutely, they genuinely feel like they're helping. If you're, you know, as I said, a lot of people identify themselves as pro-life or pro-choice, but this, when you're an obstetrician gynecologist and you say you're pro-choice, this isn't just some vague political decision. You have to decide whether you're actually gonna do those procedures. So of course, you know, it's part of your profession, it's part of your income. And of course you feel that you're helping people. If you truly believe that this is a good thing, then you think that you're helping your patients. You know, but it's an interesting statistic that a lot of people don't know. It's been studied three times in the last 10 years and published. Over 85% of all obstetrician gynecologists refuse to do abortions, over 85%. It's only one out of six obstetrician gynecologists that will even do an abortion. So you hear now, the great cry now is abortion is healthcare, abortion is essential. And I always ask the same question, if it's so essential, why do over 85% of the OBGYNs refuse to perform them?
Why indeed. Doctor, final question here. I just want people to be aware of this because I wasn't aware of this. What's this abortion pill?
Oh, we could do a whole program on that. The abortion pill is the newest method of doing an abortion. The trick has always been that you needed some level of surgical skill to do a suction D&C or a second trimester D&E abortion. With abortion pills, and there's always been a concern, just about what I said, so many OBGYNs were getting out of the abortion business, there was a real concern on the other side that, oh my God, we're not going to get anybody to do this. But with the abortion pill, if you can write a prescription, you can be an abortionist. It's that simple. There are problems with it in that now the big push has been to make these things mail order, basically do-it-yourself abortions, without ever seeing a provider, or maybe seeing them on a video screen, but never actually physically seeing a physician, or and people always assume it's just doctors who do abortions. Nurses, nurse practitioners, and others are prescribing these pills, which induce a miscarriage. There are a lot of problems that can occur. You can still have heavy bleeding. The average patient bleeds 8 to 16 days with these pills. 8% bleed longer than a month. 8% still end up needing some kind of intervention, oftentimes the suction DNC that they didn't get in the first place. And the most serious risk, and this is the problem with this mail order or over the internet abortions, 2% of all pregnancies, one out of every 50, is an ectopic pregnancy. It's not in the uterus. It's usually located in the fallopian tube. This is a dangerous situation. And the use of pills for abortion in ectopic pregnancies is strictly contraindicated. You can kill a patient that way. Patients have died that way. So when somebody's on their video link collecting their fee by talking to women and then sending them abortion pills, every one out of every 50 patients that calls in has an ectopic pregnancy, and her life could be threatened by taking those pills. Yet, total silence from ACOG and everyone else. Oh, no, this is safe, perfectly okay. And there are other problems we don't have time to get into, but there are serious medical concerns. This is not good health care.
Doctor, I cannot thank you enough for joining us and informing us and what you're doing right now. Thank you, sir.
You're welcome.
All right, we have more. Before we get to that, though, I want to talk to you about something just real briefly. Preparation. You know, we have a special coming. We have a special coming on a potential second Great Depression. And that's obviously a possibility. There are wars and rumors of wars and droughts and everything else, and we've got to be ready. And as much as I would love to tell you to go dig a deep bunker, as much as I want my own bunker, it's not feasible. It's not realistic. You can't do that. You can only do what you can do, little things, right? You get bullets. You get a way for clean water. You get all these things, but you always forget. People always forget the medical. They always forget the medical. Do you have a quality first aid kit? And probably more important than that, do you have antibiotics? You know, when the doctor's office is closed, that cut turns into death. Infections are everywhere. You need antibiotics as part of any basic backup preparation. Jace Medical has what's called a Jace case, and they give you essentially a flight of antibiotics. Go grab a couple of these things. Look, you're never going to regret having them, right? But it may cost you your life if you don't. Go to jacemedical.com and use the promo code Jesse, because that gets you $10 off, all right? jacemedical.com, promo code Jesse. We'll be back.
This Supreme Court said back then, protesters should be able to get right in people's faces. Now, they are erecting barriers to try to keep protesters as far away from themselves as possible. I think that's fundamentally wrong.
So do you think that these protesters should be prosecuted for breaking federal law?
What is the federal law? I'm sorry.
It's U.S. Code 1507. It prevents picketing or parading in or near a building, housing a court of the United States, or in or near a building or residence occupied or used by such judge. Do you think they should be prosecuted for breaking federal law?
The Supreme Court itself has heard this argument, and they have themselves said it is protected by the First Amendment.
Joining me now, my friend Ilya Shapiro. He's the author of the book Supreme Disorder. Ilya, I've talked extensively about this recently, about how good, normal people are censored or well, actually surrounded is the word I'm going for right now, how all the elites at the top, the Congress people, the media people, they do all these encouraging words to go commit acts of violence, and then you have this vile, violent scum at the bottom that are willing to commit these acts of violence, and it puts normal people in grave danger in this country.
Yeah, I mean, the fact that President Biden hasn't condemned the assassination attempt on Justice Kavanaugh is appalling. And that's just, you know, the tip of the iceberg here. What we've seen last 6 weeks since the leak of the Dobbs abortion case draft is just the biggest threat to the functioning of the Supreme Court, certainly in my lifetime. And it's I can't overstate how serious it is.
Ilya, do you get the sense, I mean, you're in the belly of the beast back there, do you get the sense that they're going to pull back on this kind of rhetoric at all? I mean, everyone's seen Chuck Schumer saying, reap the whirlwind, as you pointed out, Joe Biden can't bring himself to condemn any of this. Do you think they know if this is reaching a dangerous boiling point and a route our country really does not want to go down?
Well, I doubt Chuck Schumer is going to be giving a stem-winding speech like that again anytime soon. Maybe I'm overestimating old Chucky, but there's one thing, there's a difference between not condemning and actively encouraging, and you know, members of the squad or other more radical folks might still be engaged in actively encouraging, though it is, of course, disconcerting that we haven't even have unanimity on the Supreme Court itself to issue a statement condemning the leak. We only have Chief Justice Roberts' statement, and that's it. And that's odd.
Okay, we don't have, as you just pointed out, they won't condemn the leak, and we still don't know who the leaker is. You're the expert on this stuff. I'm not. How do we not know who the leaker is yet? Are they not looking into this?
Well, their tools might be limited. If we had a, you know, no holds barred FBI investigation requiring people to disclose or looking into, you know, subpoenaing their phone records and their email records of all the justices, clerks, staff, and their spouses, I'm sure it doesn't take a forensics genius to figure out exactly what went on. But there's not been a grand jury impaneled. It's not clear whether there's a crime that's been committed, because the issue is serious regardless of whether there's actual criminal activity involved. So I want to see, has the Chief Justice called in all of the other clerks and said, you know, sign this affidavit saying you're not the leaker and you don't know anything about it, or tell me what's going on, or the marshal? If that isn't being done, then they're not completely serious about finding the leaker. But I tell you what, Jesse, it could well be that we hit the end of the term and whoever it is will publicize him or herself in the pages of the New York Times and go on to their professorship at Yale Law School or MSNBC contributorship and reap that hero's reward.
Yeah, we all know that's what it'll be. All right, before we get to universities, which you are intimately knowledgeable about, especially at this point in time, I do want to ask you about Dobbs. What even is it? What's the impact of it? What is this thing?
So this is a challenge to Mississippi's law that prevents abortion past 15 weeks. It might surprise you to learn, Jesse, that that is a more liberal abortion regime than in, say, France. That's just the way things work in America, and the way that courts have interpreted not just Roe v. Wade, but Planned Parenthood versus Casey. Effectively, there are no limits. States can do, cannot have almost any restrictions. So if Dobbs goes as is expected, as the leak indicated, that there's a majority to overturn Roe versus Wade, that does not mean that abortion becomes illegal all over the country. Instead, it sends the issue back to the states, and we'll have states doing all sorts of different things, from California and New York saying no restrictions at all until birth, some states outlawing it at all, perhaps with some exceptions, some, most being somewhere in the middle, effectively going back to the political fight that was going on when Roe short-circuited it 50 years ago, as no less authority than Ruth Bader Ginsburg criticized the court for doing.
Ilya, I want you to walk people through this. Please take your time. What happened with you in Georgetown from the very beginning? What happened?
Sure. I'd been at the Cato Institute, the nation's leading libertarian think tank, for nearly 15 years. Thought I'd have a change of pace, a new challenge, and a different way of impacting the world of public affairs. Got a job from Georgetown Law School to be their executive director of the Center for the Constitution, which is kind of good because most of the rest of the law school is the center against the Constitution. So at least there's that. A few days before I was set to begin my work at Georgetown, the end of January, when Justice Breyer's retirement leaked, I started doing media, as you know, given that I'm an expert, and as you showed, wrote the book on the subject of Supreme Court politics. Late that night, as a not a good practice, I was doom scrolling my Twitter feed in a hotel room in Austin, Texas, and was really upset. I have always been upset about Joe Biden's pledge to restrict his selection pool by race and sex, famously reiterating his pledge to appoint a black woman. I criticized him on Twitter and went to bed. I woke up and there was a firestorm. My political opponents had screen capped my tweet, which I quickly deleted because I didn't want to cause confusion and foment the mob. But there it is. You have it on your screen. And those three words there in the middle, lesser black woman, is what got me in trouble, as those who wanted to foment outrage against me and call for my firing used that to call me a bigot and a sexist and all the rest of it. Eventually, the dean decided, Bill Traynor decided, that I could be onboarded at Georgetown, but immediately suspended with pay, pending investigation into whether my tweet violated the university's harassment and discrimination policies. 4 months later, I mean, they're, you know, investigating very thoroughly here with an outside law firm they were paying a lot of money to. Realized, somebody looked at a calendar and discovered that I had not been an employee when I tweeted, and so it wasn't even covered by these policies. So I celebrated that technical victory. This is almost 2 weeks ago now. But when I looked into the report that later hit my inbox from the Orwellian named Office of Inclusion, Diversity, Equity, and Affirmative Action, the inquisitors who were investigating me, their detailed 10-page report made clear that if I said anything in the future that offended someone or someone claimed to be offended or felt uncomfortable, that would create a hostile educational environment and I would again be subject to discipline. I could not do my job under that circumstance, I came to realize in consultation with my lawyer, some other trusted advisors, my wife, who's a better lawyer than all of us, and so I had to resign. And so I put together a detailed bill of indictments of the law school of Georgetown itself for fomenting and enforcing an illiberal regime that not only had, subverts its own vaunted free expression policy, but applies it unequally. And I gave examples of how left-wing professors had tweeted without being, far more inflammatory things than I did, without being investigated or disciplined, which was the correct call. They shouldn't have been, and neither should have I. And so I gave further examples of things I could say in talking about Supreme Court opinions or teaching a class on sensitive legal issues, and all of a sudden someone complains and I'm back in the star chamber. So I couldn't do that. I had to resign, announced my resignation in the pages of the Wall Street Journal, and away we went. That was about a week and a half ago. Now, luckily, I have had friends and allies all throughout this process, individuals, organizations, and one of these is the Manhattan Institute, where I am very fortunate to be joining them as their director of constitutional studies. But I'm trying to use this moment, this spotlight, including your show, Jesse, to show the rot at the heart of Georgetown and academia more broadly.
Yeah, Lord knows there's a lot of it. Ilya, I wish you the best. I know you'll kill it out there. Thank you, my brother.
Thank you. Take care.
All right. You know, we talk about playing offense. We talk about being aggressive. We did something on this show a while back. You'll remember it when I replay it for you. And we have a big win we get to announce. Get ready to put a smile on your face. Before we get to that, though, let's talk about the fact your eyes are itching and you wake up snotting and you have headaches and all this phlegm and you have allergies. You're not alone. I've had them forever. You don't have to take medication for that. You know that, right? And I know because I've taken a lot of it, a lot of that over-the-counter medication. I don't take any anymore. Now, I didn't do anything but buy an Eden Pure Thunderstorm. I bought one, to be honest with you. I bought one. It's amazing. I probably went out and bought two more. I have now three in my home. I believe we have three in the studio. My parents have them. Everyone I know owns them now. These things are life-changing. Just this little black box goes right in the outlet in the wall. You're not going to believe the difference. You can smell the difference in the air. Go to EdenPureDeals.com and use the code Jesse, because that gets you a three-pack for under $200. EdenPureDeals.com, code Jesse. We'll be back. What's my favorite thing in the world? Besides melted cheese, what's my favorite thing in the world? Being able to say, I told you so, or compliment myself, or something like that. What's better than that, right? No, in all seriousness, remember back in November, we brought you a story about a private school. Private school, mind you, and not just any private school. This is in Miami, and this is a private school that costs a small fortune. So this is the private school of the elite, right? Well, they were doing some really ugly drag show stuff with the kids. In case you forget, here's me from back in November. There's a school in Miami called the Miami Country Day School. It is $40,000 per child to go to this school. Obviously, as you know, that's a boatload of money. That's university money. People are paying that money to send their kids off to college. They're paying that for this school here. The school hangs Black Lives Matter filth flags. The school hangs pride flags in the classroom. We got video of an assembly they had in this school. And it tells you how insidious this is. They confiscated all the phones. By the grace of God, some students still snuck them in. And at this assembly, in this school, they brought in a black male dancer on the stage. This is what the communist in America wants for your children. Good grief. This, now we're going to cover up her face because it's a child and that's just the right thing to do, but this is a 15-year-old brought up on stage with the black male dancer dressed up like a cheerleader. Apparently, the students in the school were forced to do the dance that the dancer was doing on stage, even once they reported to the teacher they were uncomfortable. Miami Country Day is sick. That is disgusting. And I hope everybody involved in all this cleans that filth out of that school. And I'm glad we were given the opportunity to do it tonight. That was back in November. We have an update. But honestly, this wasn't my story. I didn't do this. I didn't know about this. My friend Linda Catalina, she hosts Mostly Peaceful Latinas, which I highly recommend you watch. She was the reason I was able to bring any of this information to you now. Linda, do you have some kind of an update on the twerking dancers at Miami Day and who's responsible for all this?
Hi, Jesse. Thank you so much for having me on today. We actually do have an update. So back in November, when we first broke this story, we found that there was a diversity and equity chair, Ms. Linda Chambers, who was actually responsible for turning this elite, prestigious school into a woke, trash, degenerate, education system. And Ms. Chambers here that you see on the screen, she resigned, and she's no longer going to be part of the school. It's very unclear as to where she's going or what she's going to do next, but we do know that this was a trickling effect from the story that we exposed back in November. There was a lot of pressure from the parents. There was a lot of pressure from the media, like the story that you broke. I know that the lips of TikTok also helped us get the story out there. Matt Walsh was somebody else that retweeted it. All that pressure that we put on the school, calling them, asking them, hey, how come your students are actually coming to us, our accounts, and telling us that they're uncomfortable with this woke LGBT BLM culture that has perpetrated the school in the last 4 to 5 years.
Linda, are the LGBTQ Air Force flags and BLM flags still flying at the school? Is the school done a 180? Do we have to go back in there?
So far, from what some of my internal sources and parents tell me, is that things have calmed down. They're not seeing the LGBT waving stuff, the BLM. I can't obviously say that every classroom looks the same, but what we do know is that they have completely tried to be flying on the low and trying to deviate attention from this story. So they are kind of like taking back and reeling back this woke culture in the school. We hope it stays that way, or else we're going to have to, you know, do a little bit more of an expose once again.
Linda, parents are obviously worried about this stuff. I'm a parent. I got two boys. I'm worried about this stuff. I have to talk to them about this stuff all the time. What should a parent do? Because parents feel helpless, right? They feel scared. They feel intimidated. They feel helpless. Not everybody has your desire to fight. What should parents do?
You know, I think that parents need to really think about the future of their children and the future of this country, where you have, you know, I spoke to these kids myself. This is not a she said or he said. I spoke to these kids, and I spoke to parents as well, and most of them are intimidated and scared to be canceled in this society. So I think that parents need to step up and say no more. Go to the classrooms and watch what they're teaching. They need to be able to let you in and see, is there any of these woke symbols, whether it's the BLM flag, the LGBT flag, the transgender flag, who are the teachers? Look them up on LinkedIn. A lot of times you're going to find out that when you find them on social media, they have pronouns, okay? The minute that you see a teacher with pronouns, you need to be worried, and you need to go to the school and complain about this teacher.
Amen. So I think they Linda?
And they need to be active in their children's education.
Thank you for taking the fight for them, fight to them. Thank you for the information. Come back soon. I appreciate you.
Thank you so much, Jesse. See you soon. Bye.
You bet.
Good.
All right. Good news. Pelts on the wall, baby. We got Light in the Mood coming up next. Before we get to that, though, why do you think you have a free email account? I mean, you don't pay for it. Why? Is Google just nice? Just nice guys. Would the CEO of Google wake up and say, man, you know, I feel like giving out some free stuff today? No, of course not. You have a free email account because they're collecting all your information. They're reading all your emails, the ones you send, the ones you receive. And they're not only collecting it, they're selling it. That's how they make money. Stop doing that. Pay $7.50 a month for totally secure email. You see, the company's secure. They're not even American, so American laws can't even touch them. They're based out of Switzerland. And for $7.50 a month, when you use the promo code Jesse, you get email they can't read. Go to secure.com and use the code Jesse and stop letting your enemies read your email. Secure.com, promo code Jesse. All right, it's time to lighten the mood. I've always loved impressions. I'm not very good at them, but I've always loved impressions. Our friend Sean Farish, Trump had his 76th birthday yesterday, and Sean did an impression, and I thought, you know, that's pretty good.
Hello, you think I'm born today?
Yes, it's my birthday, you know, so I would like a big, beautiful Big Mac.
I'm sorry, what did you say?
I would like a big, beautiful Big Mac.
A big, beautiful Big Mac?
Absolutely. You know what I'm talking about.
Okay, what size?
I would like it huge when you look at it. Huge.
Huge, okay.
Huge, absolutely. Big, beautiful Freedom Fries with them. And I would also like a Diet Coke.
And what drink with that?
A Diet Coke. The greatest Diet Coke in the history of the
greatest
world.
Greatest Diet Coke?
Absolutely.
I got you. Anything else?
Yes, and I'm also going to have a McFlurry.
McFlurry, a beautiful one or an ugly one?
Absolutely beautiful. You know what I'm talking about?
Absolutely beautiful McFlurry. Okay, you want Oreo M&M or chocolate pretzel?
Let me have an M&M McFlurry, a Make America Great Again McFlurry, and I just have to say I'm impressed with the fact that the ice cream machine is finally working. Build back better. What a wonderful thing.
It is working today just for you, sir.
Excellent. Thank you so much.
No problem. All right. A beautiful prize for you, sir. You can float to the beautiful first window.
What a fantastic thing. You're a great guy, believe me.
Thank you.
All right. I'll see you.
Each morning, the President of the United States receives a highly classified briefing on the most important issues facing the country. It's called the President's Daily Brief, or PDB. It's delivered by America's spies and analysts. Well, now you can hear your very own PDB in the form of a podcast hosted by me, Brian Dean Wright, a former CIA operations officer. Each morning at 6 a.m. Eastern, I'll bring you 15 to 20 minutes of the most important issues facing the country, giving you the critical intelligence and analysis you need to start your morning.
This is an iHeart podcast.